Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show. I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, as always, writer for the Film Stage, Danny King.
Hi, welcome, Brian.
Hello. We have another Film Stager here today, taking the place of Nick Newman, who could not get out to see the movie, and that is Daniel Mecca.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Hey, not much. So, I guess the first thing we should address is how I will distinguish between the two of you. So I'm just going to use your full names.
I hope that's not weird
for anyone. So today on the show, we will be talking about the newest film from director Jonathan Glazer. That is the Scarlett Johansson starring Under the Skin. Interesting film, so look forward to getting into that. Before we talk about that, Daniel Mecca will be giving us his brief rundown of the new Kevin Costner film, directed by Ivan Reitman. That is Draft Day, which also hit theaters this week. Before we get into either of those things, though, let me again take this time to tell all of you lovely people at home that you should give us a comment on iTunes, give us a rating, write to us, let us know how we're doing. And you can also comment on the actual Film Stage website. Under the posts that have the Film Stage Show on them. We're always checking that out, so if you have any thoughts, post them there, and we'll be sure to get back to you. And, as always, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. That is all for the housekeeping, though, so let's get into it. Daniel Mecca, what can you tell us about Draft Day?
Okay, Draft Day. Kevin Costner, a big star in the late 80s, early 90s, it's kind of returned after not being in too much for a long period of time recently with a lot of supporting roles, Man of Steel, Jack Ryan movie. And then he had the starring role in 3 Days to Kill. And now here with Draft Day, he's kind of trying to make a comeback as a leading man, it seems. And I mean, this movie is very fine. You know what I mean? And this is like, you know, your dad will like this movie. I mean, it's you know, it's about the NFL draft, and Costner plays the general manager of the Cleveland Browns. The whole movie takes place on draft day, and it's about how this GM has to make the right decision, trade for the right pick, taking a lot from Moneyball. You know what I mean? That whole kind of inside the game type of style,
right,
but with like an Americana feel. Kevin Costner is obviously the perfect actor to play a character like that because he's got that very Gary Cooper-esque like quality to him, very likable, and he's great in it. And the movie is, you know, if you don't, it's weird. If you don't know anything about the NFL, you're not going to really follow it well. But if you know too much about the NFL, you're going to feel like they're dumbing it down. So it's really, this movie, though it seems like it's for everybody and they're clearly trying to make it for everybody, the group of people who are really going to like it are people actually like myself who are sports fans, but not hugely so. So like, I know what the NFL draft is, but I don't know any of the specifics. So I can enjoy the movie thinking, yeah, I know what this is. They're telling me things I don't know. But yeah, it's an interesting kind of juggle the film tries to play. Jennifer Garner's great in it, though she's kind of wasted, unfortunately. Her character's like woefully underwritten. But I mean, yeah, it's just nice to see Costner doing his thing, honestly. And I'm a fan of his movie star qualities, and I think he's in top form in this movie. So I mean, for that alone, I'd recommend it. But like I said, you know, there's that window of how much you know about sports and if you know too much. So, but
all right. I was funny because I was looking at, I guess, what do we call them? Like an ad on the internet, like on the side of a website.
And, the banner.
Well, it's not really a banner. It's like on that sidebar thing. So I guess side ad. Let's call it a side ad.
sure.
And it's funny because it says, you know, Kevin Costner, Jennifer Garner, Draft Day, now playing in theaters. And then it says, featuring appearances by
NFL players.
Yeah, it just lifts off some NFL players.
Well,
and
it
I'm
is,
like, But if you're saying that if you know enough, it's dumbed down. So like, is that, it's weird how they're marketing it.
Yeah, no, and that's and that's the whole thing though. There are definitely scenes that are built for big NFL fans where it'll be like, oh, that's blah 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 from this team. You know what I mean? Or like, oh, this is this ESPN commentator that I watch every Sunday, and like clearly those are cameos that are engineered for like diehard NFL fans. But then there are other moments where obviously they'll like explain to you like, oh, this is what's going on. Like, this is how it happens. And like, I imagine that if I were somebody who like, you know, watched the NFL draft, I would be like, oh, come on. You know what I mean? Like, so it's interesting. I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it did okay this weekend. It's, I think it's making somewhere around 11 million, which I feel like for a movie like this is totally passable.
Totally passable.
But, you know, I'm just happy to see Kevin Costner in movies again, honestly. And this one is...
He's a great presence. I liked him in both Man of Steel and that other one. That other one you talked about.
Shadow Recruit.
Yeah, like, there was not a lot great in Shadow Recruit.
No.
A very, I guess, fine movie that, you know, parents might like. But yeah. Kevin Costner is good in it. And I actually did want to see 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah, actually, me and Danny, it was actually funny, last night me and Danny talked 3 Days to Kill. We were having a beer talking about 3 Days to Kill, true story.
And it sounded very fascinating.
Yeah, well, it's just, I'm not going to go down the 3 Days to Kill rabbit hole, but I will say, if you like those type of Luc Besson, you know what I mean, produced.
Yeah, like,
European action movie, you know what I mean, like Lockout.
I fucking loved Lockout.
If you love stuff like Lockout, 3 Days to Kill is right up your alley.
Oh my god, that's kind of how I felt about it. And sure. Again, Amber Heard's in it, so I'm sure I'll get around to watching it sooner or later. But oh my god, Lockout!
Lockout's a masterpiece.
This is off topic, but it's funny.
Go there.
Somewhere on the internet, for a website that I was working for when I first began, like, you know, just outside of blogging, I wrote an article that was like the 7 reasons that Lockout is better than the Avengers.
Oh my god.
And I still stand by it. I had so much more fun at Lockout than I did at the Avengers.
I'm digging that article up the moment we're done here.
Excellent.
That's great. God. Yeah, no, it's just definitely it's definitely one of those types of things where it's definitely Mick G, or my favorite Mick G movie, whatever that means. And it's
whatever that means.
And it's just totally out of left field. But anyway, draft day, a lot more conventional than 3 Days to Kill. But
Costner's back in the saddle.
He's back in the saddle, man.
It's good
to
have him.
Yeah, exactly. So,
all right. Well, that's our brief rundown of draft day. Would you say it's a first round pick?
Hey-o.
I feel like this is the type of movie that lends itself to like really terrible pull quote puns.
I'd say it makes the draft. It makes it qualifies for the draft.
It makes the cut.
Yeah, exactly. It makes the cut better.
You won't help being able to pick this one. All right. That's more shitty puns and innuendo than we even had during our Nymphomaniac discussion.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was a good time. That was a great episode. If you haven't listened to the Nymphomaniac podcast, ladies and gentlemen at home, you ought to do it. Anyway, if only to hear Nick towards the end of it desperately struggling to explain his affection for the movie.
Very interesting.
It was incredible. But that's that. Let's get in then to our feature review. Under the Skin, starring Scarlett Johansson, directed by Jonathan Glazer, and out in limited release now.
So you live alone?
Yes.
You've become pretty.
Well, I'm gorgeous.
Come to me.
So Under the Skin is an interesting little movie. It stars Scarlett Johansson as a woman kind of mysteriously driving around Scotland, picking up hitchhikers. And she is not human, I guess is the best way to put it. That's not a spoiler. I think that anyone watching the film would pick that up probably within the first 5 minutes. So, yeah. one of the reasons that we have Mr. Mecha on today is that when we realized Nick would not be able to record, our wonderful benefactor, Jordan Raup, made mention that you think that this film is pretty much a masterpiece. So I'd to start with you and get your thoughts on that. We're just going to, we're pushing you to the front of everything.
Okay.
First draft day, now this.
Yeah, well, like draft day. No, I'm kidding. So, Under the Skin. Well, here's the thing. It's definitely a hard movie, you know, to an extent, a tough movie to recommend in a general sense. There's not a lot narratively happening. You know, like you said, it's Scarlett Johansson pretty much all the way through. And she is some sort of alien type creature who has presumably come to Earth, is presumably birthed at the opening of the movie, which is, you know, one of the truly great openings we've seen in some time. And,
yeah, it was incredible.
And then she kind of runs around Scotland picking up hitchhikers, picking up drunk men, essentially asking them for directions because she's quote unquote lost, and then preying on them essentially. So that's it. I mean, it's the plot of Species, right? Which came out in 1990. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's the plot of like a B horror movie, but Jonathan Glazer elevates to this unbelievable level. I mean, the visual style alone is worth studying, you know, for years to come. And he's clearly taking from people like Kubrick and mm-hmm. Nick Roeg, and, you know, The Man Who Fell to Earth is obviously one of the first movies you think of when you talk about Under the Skin, just because of the similarities in the small narrative kind of selling points of it. But yeah, I just found every aspect of it fascinating. Like, you know, the score is one of the most appropriate, powerful scores I've heard for a movie in quite some time. It totally gives the movie the atmosphere
you feel
that Glazer wants. And yeah.
It's funny that this is being released by A24,
right?
And the last film we talked about of theirs was actually Enemy, another small, strange film. And it too, like, all I could think while watching this is like, A24 just has the knack for picking movies that have the most perfect score.
Yeah, well, it's in not unlike Enemy in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, it's about, this movie's also about, you know, identity and, you know, obviously, like the title suggests, Under the Skin, you know, what does it mean to be human or not human, and emotions, and, you know, the kind of the human condition, quote unquote. And I thought Scarlett Johansson was just unbelievable in this movie. I thought all of the effects in her kind of her trap that she sets for these men was just horrifying. And I guess my thing is this: every step of the way with a movie like this, as the moment it starts, you're like, okay, it's one of these movies, right? This is a movie that's really trying for something, and you're worried that it's going to go in a direction that feels too easy or too symbolic, you know what I mean, too heavy-handed or something. And for me, this movie never did that. Every turn it took, I was at once surprised but also so pleased by it and what it was trying to say. And then by the end, I just was so engulfed in kind of this character and her experience and you know, really cared about the whole story, actually. And so for all those reasons, it's definitely the best film I've seen this year. Better film than I saw, better than any 2013 film I saw last year. So I mean, it's one of, I'm going to be talking this movie like it's the greatest thing for a long time. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Danny King, what about yourself? Agree?
Disagree? Wow. Quite a start from Mr. Mecha over there.
Yeah.
I'm also really high on the film, although I do have a few reservations that I'll get into that will hopefully spice up the discussion a little bit. But just as a start, like, I also found it really sort of odd to watch this film in like an AMC multiplex. And I find it hard to recommend in that same way. Like, when people were walking out during the film, I was almost like I felt like happy for them. And this is like one of the rare films where I would like actively tell people, like, if you don't like it after 5 or 10 minutes, like, just turn it off.
It ain't gonna get better.
Yeah. Like my mom was asking me, because I think she read the book, like, would your father and I like seeing Under the Skin? And I'm like, probably not. It's probably not gonna be your standard like adaptation. And then, yeah, so Dan got into this, but I mean, Glazer, like, his not only visual style, but the sonic control is just kind of like beyond genius on a technical level. And one of my friends, I think, put it really well when he said that each Glazer film has gotten better because it's gotten slower. So he's just working in this like very abstract kind of time, this sort of abstract aesthetic that's like very, very powerful. But at the same time, the movie has like this really gritty documentary verite kind of moments with her interacting with these actual local non-actors who, I don't know about your guys's comprehension of accents, but I couldn't understand them half of the time, which definitely added to the alienation effect. But in terms of a few things that I wasn't quite sold on, is just like when you take material like this and you pare it down so much, it's sort of hard not to read a lot of the film as just a kind of standard like gender statement, which I don't think is like Glazer's main intention. I don't think is like the most interesting thing about the movie, but at a certain point, when like every scene, when the content of it is just, she lures men, she kills men, they harvest until they like die or whatever. It seems like a bit of a repetitive kind of feminist theme for me that's like not super interesting. And then the other thing is, I know Dan said he thought that the movie never kind of goes into a symbolic or sort of standard character arc type thing, but I think the final third of the movie is definitely maybe more standard than the first hour, just because there is an attempt to kind of give her an emotional journey. And I definitely didn't mind that move, but I think it is noticeable. And I don't know if you guys also felt that. But overall, like, I'm definitely very high on the film, and I would, you know, looking forward to see it again, probably.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of this film. It's almost hard to explain why, because in so many ways I feel like there's a different way the film could have been made that maybe would have been more successful, but it wouldn't have been as true. And I know that is possibly the most pretentious thing anyone could ever say, so I apologize. But yeah, there was something about it, something about watching Scarlett Johansson kind of go through there's a number of transformations that she kind of goes through in this film, and watching that was captivating, and just watching the way that her face will change, the way that she'll kind of snap in and out of this veneer of humanity, it was entrancing. And then even beyond that, I mean, for the first, you know, two-thirds, it's kind of a scary movie. There's something deeply unsettling about everything that is going on, and the cold, callous, unfeeling nature of Johansson's part in these machinations. And it's just bizarre how the movie somehow manages to help you. And I know that Johansson is a big part of this through her acting, but it does begin to make you shift your allegiances. And even though all this terrible stuff happens, you can't help but feel for this woman who is doing all of this. And that's on top of all of the formal aspects that make this really interesting. I mean, like, Scarlett Johansson actually picked up hitchhikers and had conversations with them. And what Danny was saying about their accents, at first I was like, it's cool, I've seen Trainspotting, I can get a Scottish accent, that's fine. But I mean, like, they're really thick. And at first I was like, well, I don't even know what the hell this guy is saying. So,
and the cameras are so hidden that it's not like the sound equipment. I'm sure that wasn't like great in those moments, because they're like, it's even the volume of their voices is like kind of muffled.
Yeah, but also, I mean, there's something about that. I mean, something about that idea of alienation. I mean, I'm sure that there were people who you might have been more able to understand they had filmed, and I'm just assuming that it was a choice to be like, I don't want anyone to feel comfortable. I don't want any person in the audience sitting there to feel like they've got a handle on this. So we're just going to run with these insanely thick, like, Edinburgh accents. And it was fantastic. I mean, we'll get into it more in spoilers, but it's just an incredible piece of filmmaking. And again, that fucking score, man.
That score
is just incredible. And it is a bit... It's not subtle, just as Enemies wasn't subtle.
Yeah.
But all my same statements related to the Enemy score can 100% go into this score. I mean, there's just no way that it could be anything else. And it kind of leaning forward into that creepy sci-fi world is just amazing.
Yeah, there's a scene on a beach in this movie that is horrifying. That is so unbelievably just... I mean, you guys know the scene I'm talking about. The way that it's shot, and the way that Scarlett Johansson or her character reacts to it, it's so inhuman and so just... so far away from, like, you know, you're watching it and you're watching it in the theater, or at least I was watching it in the theater, and you just have that moment of like, wait a minute, look, what do you know what I mean? In your head, you want to like go into the movie and like change what's happening, because it's so, like, you can't even imagine that happening in real life. You know what I mean? It's so interesting. And even the way it's shot, like wide, so impersonally, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, never going to forget that scene. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that really just, and I guess, Danny, to what you were saying about the third act, I totally hear what you're saying. And my one little problem with the movie is, the character in the yellow coat, that whole trajectory of his character at the end.
Yeah.
That's the only thing for me that really felt a little too forced, you know, a little too, like, the minute he's introduced, you're kind of like, oh, okay, here we go. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's no way that, but,
yeah, but, and we will talk about that more in spoilers.
Yeah,
but
we'll
that is kind
spoilers.
Of a problem that I had as well. I mean,
I went with it, and obviously, ultimately, it didn't really bother me in the slightest, but, but I hear what you're saying about the third act. It's definitely more, you know, it's more, what's the word? Like, structured, you know, I guess we'll just say much more structured than the first two acts. But I feel by then, at least for me, that's what I wanted. You know what I mean? I wanted to see, it was almost because the way I look at it is we see the way that she's going about her day to day life. And it's what I love about it is it's like repetitive the way that any of our lives are repetitive. It's like she gets up in the morning, she drives around, she captures guys. Kills the guys. Wakes up in the morning, you know, and like she clearly,
just like anyone's day,
you know, just
you know
like a, just the Tuesday, and she's clearly not enjoying it as much as you know whatever she should be or whatever you know or her employers think she should be, and then in the last third of the movie, you kind of get the routine of this human loner guy. And you know what I mean? And she becomes almost acclimated to the human routine. You know what I mean? And I just found that kind of parallel, among many other parallels, obviously, very fascinating. So,
yeah, I agree with that.
The one thing that works about the last third for me is, like, because of all of this setup, it makes, like, the tiniest shift in her behavior, like, so profound. So I'm thinking especially of the like cake scene where you get this like really long close up of her like cutting into the cake and eating it, and it's like this monumental gesture on her part to like take that leap. And then, you know, there's like the cut and she like coughs it up. She's not a human being. But like it's amazing how, because of all the information you have about her, like that one little gesture can say so much.
Yeah. And also, how did she pay for that cake? Let's talk about that for a second. She doesn't have any.
Yeah, did she dine in
Dined in Ditch? She totally dined in Ditch.
She don't have no money.
Guys, she's picking up and murdering hitchhikers. I mean,
look, Brian, you know it's one thing to pick up and murder hitchhikers. It's quite another to not pay for your meal.
That is true. You were taking food out of the mouths of that woman's child.
That waitress, that Scottish waitress, has a family.
Yeah, anyway. And it is just talking about that scene. So here's something that I absolutely hate. And my theater was filled with it. Was people who, like, when you go and see a movie at like an art house independent theater, and there are people in the audience who like want everyone else to know that they are watching the movie.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Something will happen and they'll very loudly go, ah. Or like something else will happen, they'll go, like as loud as they can.
Yeah.
And then
they'll say something like, ah, she can't eat the cake. And you're like, yeah, we know, dude.
Yeah. It's like, you don't need to speak aloud to process that information. Then the guys on either side of me actually had this thing where they were just like, every once in a while they would laugh. And I don't know if they thought it was funny or they thought that they were clever for getting something or it was like a laugh of appreciation, but it wasn't a real laugh. It was literally like, ha! No one
Classic
laughs
Glazer.
Like that.
So maybe they were aliens.
Maybe. But that's,
maybe they felt like they were getting talked down to. You know what I mean? Like this was they were like, this was draft day for them. You know what I mean?
Course,
like,
of course. Yeah. They the thing is, like, watching the movie where your every little movement and action that Scarlett Johansson makes is a revelation as to her character and what she does or does not understand, I was actually able to appreciate in a weird metatextual way the assholes on either side of me who were letting out these guffaws or these like appreciative moans, I guess, during the film. So it's interesting, and I do love how the movie, like afterwards, I was looking at people on the street walking through DC, and it wasn't the same, you know. I was like glancing at everyone a little closer and trying to understand them a little deeper. So it's that kind of movie, and I quite liked it for that. We should, you know, to really get into it though, we do have to talk about the ending, this final third, as we've so cryptically called it. So anyone who hasn't seen Under the Skin and doesn't want to be spoiled on some of the twists and turns of the last part of the movie, it is out in limited release now, so check it out. But we are getting into spoilers. So this last third, the man in the yellow coat. And before him, I guess the man in the brownish-green coat.
Indeed.
Everyone can be defined by the coat that they wear in this film because it's goddamn Scotland.
The man in the yellow coat, not to be confused with
the man in the yellow hat.
Yes, exactly.
So let's talk about the end, because there's a turning point wherein Scarlett Johansson meets a man with some form of a disfigurement, something like an elephantitis.
Right.
I apologize. I have no idea what the actual medical diagnosis for that would be, but he is lonely, as are the men who she has picked up, but there's something else to him, and she releases him once he has been submerged in this fluid. Guys, also that disturbing. we didn't talk about it in the non-spoiler section because I don't want to ruin this for anyone. She takes them into this room of utter blackness with this reflective black floor, And as she walks away from them and they follow, disrobing, they sink mindlessly into this pitch black nothingness. And when you finally see what's happening below the surface of that,
I wish I'd never
haunt your dreams.
Yeah.
Like, oh man. And it's one of those things, I didn't think, I don't know what you guys thought, but I didn't think when I was watching it that they were going to ever show that.
No, I didn't think so either. And
I was kind of like, yeah. Oh, they go into the blackness. Get it. Totally yeah, get it. And then they go to that scene and I was like, oh, don't even. But in, I mean, that is one of the greatest scenes in the movie, though. I mean, that scene, that's the stuff that'll haunt your dreams forever and ever and ever. You know, I mean, that, yeah. Brilliantly done. But yeah.
And the fact that we see that and understand the utter horrificness of it makes it all the more powerful when she releases this man.
Yeah.
And then she kind of ditches her mission. And it's her time to try to understand people. Because it seems like, and one of the brilliant things about the film is that you never find out what the hell all this is for. Mm. It seems as though they may be, like, I can't tell if it's like profit or science that's driving them.
It seems like science.
It seems a little like science.
And I think in the novel, correct me if I'm wrong, Danny King, but I think in the novel it's harvesting and stuff like that too, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's like they're using the humans for food.
Yeah.
And there's like one shot in the movie that's like pretty oblique, but it's like that long red
all the materials going into
and
it looks
it looks like guts or something. That's so oblique,
stuff,
you know.
Under the skin. I mean, not the title, but it is. It's just like they vacuumed out everything but the flesh. Oh god. And then there's like a shot of a red laser, so I don't know what that's all about. But I mean, like, it's just bizarre that you don't learn what all this is for. But she begins to try to find out. I guess she's begun to look at us in a way that goes beyond whatever motivation there was for destroying us. And it's during this final third. I wasn't looking at my watch, though. So we're saying final third. I guess we're just saying, like, the last act. Yeah, it's not to scale in terms of time. But yeah, it's really interesting. Because at first, it's just this kind of, you know, she's warm and she's pleasant, and then, but if she doesn't get what she wants, she just immediately goes steel face. And now she's like broken. And what's I think the best about it for me is that once she kind of abandons this mission format that she's got, all of her natural like grace that she had so like perfectly pulled off before kind of left her. Like, she starts to lose the ability to even move like a human, whereas that had never been a problem before. And so it's interesting to see how, like, it's very easy to pretend to be a human, but once you try to be one, even the simple things start to become more difficult, because suddenly you have this whole other dimension that you're considering.
Well, yeah, I mean, it speaks so, I think, intelligently to the idea of just complexity, right? Like, I mean, the whole point is like, yeah, she can be a seductress. You know what I mean? She can be someone who is beautiful. And because she is someone, you know, who is put into a beautiful person's body right at the beginning. But it's like you're saying, once she meets this guy at that bus station, you know, and it's, he cares for her. And then all of a sudden it becomes more about, oh, okay. Like, what does it mean to be beautiful, but also what does it mean to be good, right? Whatever, you know, what does it mean to be true? And then all those are things she clearly doesn't understand. And, you know, like little moments, like you said, like the moment where he picks her up over that puddle, you know what I mean? Like that's, this is good filmmaking, you know what I mean? Like this is good filmmaking. Like, it's a silent movie. We haven't even really talked about that. It's mostly a silent movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
You know, she has probably less than 30 lines, right? And
I would say so.
You know, in total, maybe, you know, including this talkative Scottish guys, I mean, you're talking audible lines, maybe 50. You know what I mean? Like, there's plenty of inaudible lines given the Scottish dialect, but it's like, you know, like, that's another part of this movie. I mean, it's, you know, immersive in a way that, like, films from the 1920s were. You know what I mean? Like, where they had less to do, less to work with, but more, you know, to an extent, more was done. But, you know. Yeah,
you kind of sink into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
But let's talk about that final scene.
Sure.
Climax of the film. The man in the yellow coat, as we say. So, Dan, you said that this had been... Daniel Mecca. You said that this had been a problem for you, but that in the end it didn't matter. So, why don't you walk us through what...
Sure, took you there. Yeah, so, you know, she goes on the run, essentially, right? So what happens is she... tries to be physical with this nice man, but then realizes obviously that she's not built like a human, in a very equally horrifying scene. And then, or I guess not horrifying, more sad, really, tragic. And then she goes on the run. She goes into these Scottish woods, really dense Scottish woods, and she's by herself. And, while she's kind of wandering, lost symbolism, through these woods, runs into this guy who I guess sells himself as like a park ranger, and he's like, oh, hey, what are you doing here? You know, you having a good time? And she's like, yep, whatever, you know, I'm just being an alien. And and he is so clearly like not a good person. You know, I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, call it good filmmaking, call it bad filmmaking, I don't know. But it's like the moment he's on screen, he's like, oh, what are you here alone? Like, and you're just like, Scarlett Johansson, if you were a human woman, you would know you got to get out of those woods. But like, she doesn't like,
and that's,
you know,
like kind of what's tragic about it.
Yeah. Like clearly he's a predator. Right. And then of course, then she goes, she finds this like little refuge place, which I guess is his like den apparently. And then
it's like a park ranger's place.
Right. But I mean,
I don't think he's a park ranger. It's like, you know, in a nicer area, you might have like a picnic pavilion. I think it's a little bit like that.
Scottish picnic pavilion, you know? And then so she's dreaming and stuff, and then he tries to take advantage of her, and then this like extended chase scene happens, and then she's ultimately hunted down. You know, the hunter becomes the hunted kind of a thing, and she's hunted down. And here's the thing. I mean, that all of that I loved, like the hunter becoming the hunted, all that I loved. It was just more that there was this guy in the woods. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the convenience of that is a little like, you know, she's in the woods and then there's a guy in the woods and then, and then she's chased. Like that was the only moment where I was a little bit like, I wish there was a better way for you to get there. You know what I mean? Like a better way for you to introduce, you know, like some better motivation for this character than just like, I want to rape and kill. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, but
yeah. It's true. He is a bit of a one note kind of, you know, just casually gonna rape a girl.
Yeah, like he's like, and I get it. I mean, I obviously appreciate the idea of like you meet the good human, you meet the bad human. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like you meet the complexities continue to arise as the film continues and blah 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 blah. But it's like I just wish. You know, because the good man who like clearly cares for her, he's given so much. I feel like he's got a small role, but there's so you feel like you know so much about this guy. You know nothing about him, but he seems so like sad and good. But like it's so clear that he's like lost things in his life. You know what I mean? And you care for this guy the way she cares for him. And then, like, to have that happen and then have this other guy just, like, show up and just be bad for no reason is a little tough. But
it's true. But it is – but one of the things that I was struck most by during the scene – I mean, as like, the guy's – like I said, he's kind of one-note evil. But her – it's like, a really huge tragic scene because she has no idea – how to handle this, and I'm not even sure that she is trying to, I guess, protect herself from a rape. She might just be trying not to get, I guess, outed again, like she was with the nice guy? Because they attempt to have sex, and it is not possible.
No.
And so I'm wondering, because she's an alien. She doesn't understand, I don't know if she understands things like, I don't know what her anatomy is. I don't know what her society is. I don't know if there's such a thing as consent to this life form. So it's like you're afraid for her because this guy obviously means her harm, but then you're also wondering, is she running because she's scared for her safety, or she's scared that another person will realize that she doesn't belong?
No, I think it's definitely that she's scared for her safety, because I think the whole point of that scene is she becomes, that's her at her most human, right? Because that is the most human thing in the world, is fear, right? That's the whole, it's like, we know we're going to die, right? So it's like that knowledge.
I think it definitely becomes that way.
Yeah, like
at first I wasn't sure.
Right, maybe not at first, but then when he's got her pinned.
Yeah.
You can tell. Yeah. I mean she's aware the way we all are. She's like, "Oh fuck. Like no, this is going to happen." You know what I mean?
The worst part about that is that she was basically free and then she's in his truck trying to get away.
Yeah.
And this is another weird moment that you can look at. She sees him and then hits the horn.
Yeah.
And you're like, as a normal human, you're like, don't do that. He's going to see you. And I'm wondering if she thought that it would, like, scare him.
Yeah, did she know it was a horn? She accidentally, you know, she was like...
Well, she drove a truck. She might know what a horn is.
Oh, true. She did drive a truck.
Yeah, but I think, you know, she's never been the prey before, so she doesn't know how to deal with that. And then, you know, once we get under the skin, I'll just
hello
throw it out there again. Sorry. Once he's attacking her, and then he tears her human suit. I mean, that scene is incredibly heartbreakingly moving.
Yeah.
It's such a painful way to end a film.
Yeah.
Especially because this evil asshole then douses her with petrol and lights her on fire.
Which, can we talk? I don't want to belittle the end of this movie. But if you're a murder rapist, okay, and you're just trying to murder and rape, and then you come across an extraterrestrial, you're just gonna burn it? No, dude, you call someone. That's an extraterrestrial. That's a discovery.
you went from disgusting rapist to most important scientific discovery.
Like
of
your
the
life
21st
was,
century.
You were tortured. Your life was sad, and then you discovered an alien. Man, like, take that Nobel Peace Prize. What are you doing? He's just like, oh, this clearly isn't somebody human. I'm going to go get gasoline and burn it. And obviously, I understand, like, you know, we kill, we don't understand. I appreciate the, like, the message behind it. But, I mean, from a practical standpoint, you bag that alien and you go to the local science research facility and you make a lot of money or something.
You say, like, hey, I was going to rape her, but then her skin came off.
Sure.
And I thought maybe you guys would want to take a look at this.
And nobody hears that first word. Everybody just hears skin came off because she's an alien. You know what I mean?
Yeah. After you show them the pitch black reptilian looking alien, like insanely minimalist design, but so haunting and evocative.
And interestingly, I don't know if this was intended, a lot like the AI aliens, which was written by Kubrick. So think about that, guys. Come on. Was it like a little homage? Who knows?
Possible.
But they looked a lot like the AI aliens. Yeah. Or she looked a lot like the AI aliens.
And there's so much like expressive like loneliness and kind of resignation in this creature's face as it's looking at the mask, I guess you could call it, of Scarlett Johansson that it had been living in.
Well, the body. I mean,
I mean, like, it wasn't looking at all of the body. It was looking at the head part.
The face, yeah.
The face part.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and there are so many other, like, that's such a great throwback, that moment, because that's, like, a throwback to the first moment when she realizes what a mirror, when she catches her reflection, mm-hmm. and she like looks. I mean, that's, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like all of those moments, like, these are the moments that make this film great. You know what I mean?
And they're what help you to get over the murder rapist who lights her on fire.
And yeah, lights her on fire. Yeah.
I was so, so
irresponsible.
No thought socially for the, yeah. But he's a logger. So, I mean, what does he give a shit about living things?
Fox Mulder would be so mad.
He would be angry. That was a very X-Files like setting.
Yeah, it was.
It was, and like it's
so
like,
X-Files.
It's so beautiful, this movie. Like, and the place is alien, and there's an alien that's alien, and we realize that people are kind of alien. It's really fantastic. Like, I can't say enough how good this movie is if it's the type of movie you'd be into, because I absolutely 100% realize that there will be people who find this insufferable.
Sure. Yeah.
I am not one of them. I was quite a fan.
Yeah, but
so were there any other aspects that we wanted to talk about before we moved on?
I'm good. Danny King, are you good?
Man, that ending.
Yeah.
I was so sad. I watched this woman leave a baby on a beach and straight up murder a guy whose only crime was failing to save a man and woman who were drowning.
And I love how the movie like hammers home the fact that kid died too. Like, I love that. It's like the kid's sitting there on the beach, and then you have that like human instinct where you're like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe he'll be okay, right? Maybe someone will find him. And then like she's listening to the radio the next day, and it's like, yo, no, that kid is 1,000% dead. And you're just like, no, oh, the kid.
I know, she's such a cruel, but it's, the thing is, like, and it's, a lot of this again goes to Scarlett Johansson's acting. She's not cruel, she just doesn't know. Like, I guess there's no context for her to have a system of morality or anything. And so it's even more interesting to see her make this shift into becoming comfortable and curious about, you know, her human facade. And it's really something else. And like, there is a movie out there somewhere probably going to get made that's going to be like the dumb version of this, where, you know, true love saves her, and she'll like destroy the alien race that's trying to eat or harvest humanity. And I'm so glad this movie really didn't do that.
No.
It kept it small and personal and meaningful. So that's how I'll end.
Nice.
So that's Under the Skin, the newest film by Jonathan Glazer, out in limited release now. So go online, see where it's playing near you, and watch it. So now we're going to talk about movies that are coming to DVD and Blu-ray this week. Let's get into it. We have The Secret Life of Walter Mitty. That was the Ben Stiller film from this Christmas. Did anyone see that?
I saw it. You know what? I saw it and I liked it. Oh, how about
that?
Is it another fine film?
I don't know. I mean, it's like a really big budget self-help movie. You know what I mean? No reason it had to cost $100 million, but I don't know. I found myself smiling at the movie. I don't know. Danny, did you like it or?
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad or anything. I actually saw it at the New York Film Festival.
Oh, that's right. Right.
So I watched it and I was like, oh, it was a pretty pleasant movie. And then I was like checking Twitter and everyone was like pretty negative on it, and I was kind of surprised because it just seemed like a.
Yeah, I was surprised. There was a lot of like anger.
Well, I think the negativity comes from the money spent. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like the movie wants to be bigger and better than it is, and I feel, you know what I mean. And I feel like that mm-hmm. disconnect kind of pisses people off, which I understand. But I just, I don't know. Like, I, you know, it's, you know, the original movie with Danny Kaye is like amazing, right? But I mean, you know, it's an impossible task. So I thought it was just fun.
All right, we also got Philomena. Anyone see that?
Yeah, it's a good movie.
All right, it's a good thing you're here, because I didn't see any of these fucking things.
It's a good movie. It's a good, if your dad loves Draft Day, your mom loves
Philomena.
You know.
And your cousin is going to love Ride Along.
Hey, Ride Along. I missed that one.
I still really want to see Ride Along.
missed Ride Along. But I do love Kevin Hart. So.
I love Kevin Hart. I love Ice Cube. Apparently the film was written by Jason Mantzoukas.
You don't love Ice Cube. What? Who's ever said I love...
what are you talking about?
In like an actor. You said that like an actor.
He was great in 21 Jump Street.
I just love... You love Are We There Yet?
Love me some Ice Cube. Obviously, not everyone's got their bad movies. Let's not judge the man based surely
love
on a...
Friday After Next.
We also have The Nut Job.
Nope, missed that one.
And then the movie I'm most excited to see on this incredibly long list is Alice.
Oh, you never seen it?
I've seen it. I love this movie, and it's coming to Blu-ray, so I'm excited.
It's a very interesting Woody Allen movie.
Wait, what?
Alice.
No, I'm talking about the Jan Švankmajer film.
Oh.
The stop-motion Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, hang on, I'm looking it up now.
Okay,
not
yeah.
Two very different. That's definitely not a
Woody Allen. Talking about some very different things.
What year did it come out?
Oh, I don't know. It's like 88, apparently.
88?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay.
This movie is bananas, and I love it. It's they use like real taxidermied animals, and
I've never seen this movie.
Oh, it's a marvel. So I'm pushing that one. Everyone should check that out. I'm gonna pre-order it on Amazon. I'm gonna do it right now. So yeah, that's that. Danny King, any of these standing out to you?
Definitely Breaking the Waves coming to Criterion, and then for new releases, I actually really like The Invisible Woman, which looks like it's coming out.
Yeah. You're the only person I know who's even like seen The Invisible Woman.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely like the radar, but Ray Fiennes is like a pretty good director, so if you can catch up with it.
I want to see Great Expectations, the new Mike Newell movie. I never got a chance to see it in theaters, but I've actually heard positive things about it, but just no one, you know, just didn't really make a dent here. But
didn't make a dent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's what's coming to DVD and Blu-ray. Let's talk about what's coming to theaters next week. Transcendence, the newest film starring Johnny Depp. This is directed by Christopher Nolan's DP, the guy he's been using since, I think, Memento, and that is Wally Pfister.
That's it.
I love his cinematography. Absolutely beautiful. I don't know how this film is going to be, but I'm excited to see it. Because it's got a lot of big names, and it's got an interesting premise, and yeah, just want to see what Wally can do. I'm also now interested to see Interstellar, because Wally didn't lens that one.
Yeah.
So I'll be interested to see how the new collaboration goes. But yeah, we'll be talking about Transcendence next week, I believe. It is Easter weekend, so we'll have to work around some scheduling and some travel, but we should be here. We also have A Haunted House 2, and as a man who somehow saw A Haunted House, I can say that no one on Earth should see that. We have Disney Nature's Bears, which looks adorable, but that's the kind of thinking that got the grizzly man killed. And we also have Heaven Is For Real, which folds
Heaven
nicely.
Is For Real.
It folds nicely into our discussion that went at the beginning of Noah. And Fading Gigolo, written and directed by John Turturro and starring John Turturro.
We're all going to go see Heaven Is For Real, right?
Obviously.
But in all seriousness, I'm going to see Heaven Is For Real.
Are you really?
Do you see the title of it? It's called Heaven Is For Real. I'm going to see it. Got to see it.
For real?
For real. For real. The only thing that would make Heaven Is For Real more appealing to me is if Kevin Costner was in it.
I mean, isn't that basically what Field of Dreams was?
Heaven Is For Real. Field of Dreams. For real. Oh, God.
Oh, God.
Just, I can't wait.
Not
anyway.
To diminish people who, you know, will see and love that film. I'm sure it'll do gangbusters at the box office, but...
No, it's not the... No. It's not the movie... I mean, whatever. The movie doesn't look great by any means, but...
The title
it's not,
is a nightmare.
It's the title. It's yeah. The title is just a gift, ironically, from God.
It should just be Heaven Is Real.
Or Heaven Exists.
Like, there is a heaven.
But you know, but Brian, you know this movie is based on a book, right? So it's
isn't
like...
Isn't the book based on a true story or something?
Yeah, and so the in the it's about a 5-year-old kid.
Well, that's
or something.
What happens when you let a 5-year-old dictate the title of your movie.
That's what I'm saying. So clearly this title must be the kid saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, obviously. Yeah, there's going to be a point where the kid looks up at someone.
Heaven
with,
is
like,
for
light
real.
Shining on him, and he's like, heaven is for real.
Yeah,
anyway, exactly. Yeah, it is a nightmare title. It should just be like, check this shit out. Heaven exists.
I mean, that's not much of a better title, but I would see that. I would see that movie too, yeah.
Oh, God. All right. So that's it. That's what's coming to theaters. I definitely am looking forward to Transcendence, as I said. Fading Gigolo, I saw a preview for it. It kind of looks funny, but you know what? I'm so off of Woody Allen right now.
No.
I don't even. I never liked him that much to begin with.
Come on.
As a presence. And now with all the other stuff, I'm just like, why bother?
Come on.
Come on, what?
Fading Gigolo. It's going to be funny. I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, I love me some John Turturro. So I'll see it. I'm just not going to go out of my way to see
Dude,
it.
Dude, you got late in her career, Sharon Stone in this movie.
Yeah. Late career Sharon Stone.
Anyway.
All right. Well, let's talk about the things that we have watched on our own that we think people should check out, and then we can be on our way. So, Danny King, let's start off with you for once.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't get to too much this week, actually, outside of newer stuff. I didn't see Dom Hemingway, which was
Was interesting. I wanted to see that.
It was, like, a lot stranger than I was expecting, and pretty, like, uneven. But I basically just saw it because Jude Law looked like he was having a lot of fun, and his performance lived up to that. So if you think you would, you know, enjoy that performance, it's a really fun character, but like it's sort of, you know, like Under the Skin has a final third that kind of tries to push in an arc that like wasn't there previously with like the daughter and stuff. But anyways, that's another story. In class this week, we also watched the Eileen Wuornos documentary from like 1993 by Nick Broomfield. And that was pretty interesting, just going through how corrupt her case was, with like police officers kind of trying to get TV rights to her story. And her lawyer was like a failed musician who was trying to kind of like con his way into money to like offering interviews for her. So, you know, just a lot of bad things going on during that trial. And if you want to watch that, you should
All right.
take a look at the film.
All right. Excellent. And Daniel Mecca, what about yourself?
I've been catching up on 90s Christian Slater films recently.
Yes, as we all should.
Oh, wow.
Please
so
tell
I've
me
been,
you watched Broken Arrow.
Well, Broken Arrow, I don't need to catch up on, Brian.
Okay.
I'm all caught up on my Broken Arrow. But I was catching up with a film called Pump Up the Volume from 1990.
Okay.
This features Samantha Mathis in her feature film debut, and Mr. Slater as the lead. And it's essentially, he's a high schooler who by day is a very nerdy, quiet kid, but by night does like a pirate radio station where he plays Hard Harry. And he like talks about the real issues to the high school kids, and he plays only the cool music, and the principal and the teachers eventually find out about it, and they try to get him shut down, but you know Hard Harry's not going down without a fight, and so that is what Pump Up the Volume is about.
You know that about Hard Harry.
You know that about Hard Harry, and so that's, you know, that's all jokes aside, actually not that bad of a movie. It's kind of an interesting timepiece, 1990, MTV, you know what I mean? Very like faux rebellious type of stuff. But the music is good. Christian Slater's good. And if you want something to laugh at, but also actually enjoy, Pump Up the Volume is that movie. And then I watched 1998's Hard Rain.
Oh God.
With Morgan Freeman and Christian Slater, written by Graham Yost.
Oh, the guy who did Justified.
Yeah,
and Speed.
Yeah, and
the
I gotta
produces The Americans.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That Graham Yost. And so this movie came hot on the heels of Speed, right?
Yeah.
And so, and you can tell because it's essentially like Speed. It's like the Speed setup.
Speed of flash flooding.
Right. It's like the Speed setup, but with flash flooding. And it's, I mean, it's like, once again, not on like a Pump of the Volume or like really any Christian Slater movie from the 90s. It's
what inspired this? I need to know what made you decide that you were going to do this.
Brian, I live a complicated life, man. I don't know. I become like a weird completist when it comes to stuff like this, like with Christian Slater. I don't know. I saw some movie. I can't even think of what began it, but I just was like, oh, Christian Slater, like, what has he been doing lately? And like Mind Games, that might have been it. Mind Games, his show got canceled.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, Christian Slater. And then I like went on IMDb, dude, and I was just like, I gotta tackle these films. But Hard Rain is like, it's a fun action movie, actually. It's like fascinating how they were able to make it. You know what I mean? Because the whole movie, it's flooding. And so I would actually like to know kind of how they shot it. But anyway, you know, not a great movie, but it's, once again, kind of a funny timepiece because it's 90s, people still had money, Speed was a success, so you can tell they're really trying to, like, cash in on that and kind of do that again. It cost $70 million, and it made 19. Wow. It made 19, you know?
Wow.
That's so poor.
I'm just telling you. And, like, you can tell because, like, Christian Slater was a lot like Keanu Reeves when he did people were kind of like, oh, Keanu Reeves is kind of on his way out, right? Because he had just made Point Break a few years ago, but more or less was kind of not a star.
Right.
But then Speed catapulted him back up. And you can tell that was the intention with Christian Slater. They were like, let's try to like get this once famous guy into a big movie and like and see where that takes us. And it just went the other way. So it's just like a funny movie to watch. But anyway, that's been my life the last couple of days. So.
Okay, well, that's fantastic. I'm glad you haven't gone mad yet. So, that's good. Christian Slater's actually been in my life a lot recently. as I'm sure he is with many people. I saw him in Nymphomaniac, and then he voiced a character whose name is Slater on Archer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I gotta watch that episode.
Right, you completionist, you gotta get in there.
Completionist?
You said you're a completist.
Yeah, no.
I don't even want to know what that'll entail.
I'm going to write a movie called The Completionist.
Oh, God. It's like a really specific kind of prostitute.
Terrible.
The closer. Anyway. So what did I watch? Let's get back to movies, shall we? I watched Good Will Hunting.
That's a good one.
I had not seen
this movie. Gus Van Sant, Matt Damon.
Yes, the Van Sant.
Gus Van Sant.
I love Gus Van Sant.
Me too.
Paranoid Park, I think, is still my favorite of his. I know that's a controversial opinion.
What? That's insane.
That's your
favorite Gus Van Sant movie?
I really love Paranoid Park.
Have you seen My Own Private Idaho?
Yes.
Have you seen any of his other movies?
I have seen all of them, except maybe Jerry.
Oh, Jerry is seriously great.
Yeah, I loved Elephant. I don't know, there's something about Paranoid Park that I quite enjoy. And I can't put my finger on it. But I do like it, but I love Good Will Hunting because, I mean, how can you not? It's just a great, great fucking movie. And, you know, Elliot Smith is my man. I pour one out from him. I pour one out for him whenever I can. So the fact that his music permeates the film is great. And yeah, it was so bizarre watching it because Matt Damon is not that young man anymore.
No, he's not. And Ben Affleck is not either.
No. But it is interesting to see them kind of here, like at the outset, you know.
That's like one of my all time favorite movies, actually, like just on a personal enjoyment level. And the annoying thing about that movie is how good Robin Williams is. And then when you think about kind of, he didn't do anything with that. Like, he won an Oscar, and then he kind of never gave, like, I guess Insomnia and 1 Hour Photo.
I was going to say Insomnia and 1 Hour Photo, I will hold up with this.
Those three, he made three movies in 2002 that are great, right? Death to Smoochie, Insomnia, and 1 Hour Photo. Like, performance-wise, he's great in all of them. But then, like, after that, that was, like, the last gasp. It's, like, such a bummer, you know what I mean? He, like, never...
Well, he did, Oh, fuck, I'm looking at some of this. This ain't good. I just went to his...
That's a mistake, dude. Don't do it.
Oh, man. But I will say that he was funny in World's Greatest Dad.
Oh, that you're right. Good call.
Yeah,
all right.
World's Greatest Dad I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yep.
The Final Cut was an interesting movie.
Oh, I never saw it.
Oh, it was good. It was one of those sci-fi films that is very interesting. It's got an interesting little premise to it. Basically, children get these implants that record their entire lives through their eyes.
Oh, cool.
So that when they die, like, you give the movies to these cutters, and they will edit the footage into, like, you know, an hour-long memorial movie, so, like, people can, you know, have those cherished memories. But it's a treatise kind of on memory and this kind of, like, the look inside of people's minds, like, and seeing life unedited.
Yeah.
And he becomes... Anyway, it's a good movie. Just check it out.
Yeah. I will.
He was also in Artificial Intelligence, but he was just a voice.
Oh, yeah. He was the Blue Wizard, right, or whatever.
Dr. No?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's great. Oh, What Dreams May Come. I loved that movie, too. What are we talking about?
No, you didn't love What Dreams May
Come. I did love What Dreams May Come. I am a romantic, sir.
I gotta rewatch What Dreams May Come now. I know I'm gonna do a Robin Williams. I gotta do a
that's
Robin Williams
next
thing now.
You've got your next.
Because of Brian. Great, wonderful.
That sucks for you. Anyway, so Good Will Hunting. It's a fantastic movie. Check it out. That is the end of our show, though. Join us next week when we'll be talking about Transcendence. In the meantime, here's where you can find us online. Danny King.
Filmstage.com, KingBulletin.com, and Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin, and also on Christian Slater's website.
just browsing.
Just there. I'm just on there. So.
Daniel Mecca.
TheFilmStage.com, and on Twitter, I'm DJ Mecca.
All right, and I am on the film stage. I've actually got a review up of Hate Ship, Love Ship, which is a damn fine movie. Damn fine movie. Kristen Wiig is a kind of a revelation in a dramatic role. Then we also can find me at Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan, and on my personal website, dearfilm.net. So ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again, and join us next week to talk Transcendence.